entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Yes, indeed. Hello there. A good Sunday morning to you. And welcome into the best of Downtown on this second day of February 2020. Rich Kimble here along with Kerry Haskell. As I came into the studio this morning, I saw my shadow, and that means we'll have six more weeks of Downtown. And then some. Suckers, you're stuck with us. I mean, you can change the channel, sure, but wait, we've come this far. Why bother? We're brought to you this morning and every morning by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. A look back at some favorite recent conversations on the program on this Sunday morning from actress Annette O'Toole, who's keeping very busy these days, a rock and roll Hall of Famer in Dave Clark, who's got a brand new collection of the Dave Clark Five's biggest hits coming out. And we begin with a conversation from actress and author Joyce Bulifant. You know her from countless television appearances in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. She was Murray Slaughter's wife, Maria, on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Perry Mason, The Virginian. My Three Sons. You name it. She was there. She was in the film Airplane. And in later years, played David Spade's mother in Just Shoot Me. She's also the author of a new memoir, My Four Hollywood Husbands. Here's our conversation with actress Joyce Bulifant. You have had such a remarkable career, and I feel like I didn't know the half of it until I read your book, and my goodness, that was an eye-opener, to say the least. You've certainly faced and overcome some challenges along the way.
Well, we all have, but it's how you do it. I recently read a quote, and I think it's my new favorite quote, and that's, your attitude is like a flat tire. If you don't change it, you can't go anyplace. And I think a lot of it has to do with how you get through things is the attitude that you have.
Well, you faced some challenges right away with a difficult childhood. I think most people wouldn't know that you were in and out of a number of foster homes.
Yes, I was. But you know what? It has also given me appreciation of many things. You can use things that happened to you in the past and to your disservice, or you can use it to make life better for other people.
Your memoir is entitled My Four Hollywood Husbands, and you met the first of those four at a very young age when you were in school together. James MacArthur, best known as Dan-O from Hawaii Five-O, and it didn't click right away. He was a little prickly to deal with at first until you got to know him.
Well, he did have his prickly side. That indeed he did.
He would end up becoming your first husband, and that would also lead you into a long relationship with the First Lady of the American Theater, his mother, Helen Hayes.
Yes, we had a very interesting, diverse, up and down, and very loving relationship right up until she passed. And Jimmy was very sweet about conferring with me regarding the service for her funeral. And the one thing I said, I know your mom would like it, bagpipes. And they weren't all during the service, but as we walked out of the church on a very sunshiny but chilly day, as they put her coffin into the hearse, in the distance you could hear the bagpipes. And I thought, oh, good for Jimmy, he did it, because she would love that.
You also, around the same time, met someone who would be a big influence and a guide in your career and your life, the great Lillian Gish. How did you meet her, and how did that relationship grow and blossom through the years?
Well, she was a great friend of Helen. And she was always stood by me when Helen was down on me, which was often. And one day was kind of like a French fire. I was visiting her in her apartment in New York City. It was such a beautiful apartment to move into. It was all Lillian. It was all beautiful satin brocade and this light pink color. And the whole apartment smelled of tuberose perfume, which she loved. And we'd sit and we'd have chocolates and champagne, and we'd talk about mostly spiritual things. She was a great help in that way. But one day, when Helen wasn't talking to me, Lillian said, "Don't mind her, darling. She has the temper of an Irish washerwoman, and pay no attention." But at that time, the doorbell rang downstairs, and Jim Frazier, Lillian's manager, who looked after her and was a great friend, went into panic mode and said, "Quick, get Joyce out the servants' entrance. Helen's on her way up in the elevator." So we had a very close relationship. I called her my fairy godmother.
Well, your first husband, James MacArthur, battled demons, largely alcoholism and a violent temper as well. And that would be a theme throughout your life with your Hollywood husbands. And you've described yourself in many ways as a co-alcoholic. What do you mean by that, Joyce?
Well, Mariette Hartley, my dear friend and wonderful actress, gave me a book when I was on Husband Number Two, which is perfect name for him, Husband Number Two. He really had dark demons. And Mariette gave me a book called The Co-Alcoholic, and I started reading it, and I said, "Oh my gosh, I'm a big part of this whole problem. I'm feeding into the alcoholism. I'm making excuses and accepting bad behavior, and I can't do this." And I said to Ed, it was Ed Mallory who played Dr. Bill Horton on Days of Our Lives, and he was a wonderful, imaginative and creative person and a good director, a good actor, a Shakespearean actor too. And he just was so sad in his life. And I said, "You know, Ed, I'm causing these problems. I'm part of it. I hope I'm not the cause of it, but I am feeding into your problems. And it's not healthy, and it certainly isn't healthy for the children." And I always had my children at the forefront of my thinking when I had to leave husbands. And I stayed for a long time. My first marriage to Jimmy was 9 years, and to Ed was 7 years. And to Bill Asher, 20 years, and to my wonderful Roger, who stopped drinking, and we were able to have a really happy marriage together, just a beautiful marriage. And that was, we were together 18 years and married 16 years. So, but the important thing, and people don't talk about it very much, is the co-alcoholic. Not only do you feed into the problem because you don't talk about it, the old elephant in the room, but you also become ill as the alcoholic needs more alcohol to feel that buzz and good feeling. As they're getting sicker and sicker, you are getting sicker and sicker. I mean, I had everything. I had migraine, headaches, irritable stomach. I had mono, and I had finally ended up with typhoid fever. I mean, your immune system is so broken down, and as they become more dependent on the alcohol, you become sicker and sicker right alongside. So it's not a healthy existence for either the alcoholic or the codependent person.
We're talking with Joyce Bulifant here on Downtown. You've had so many wonderful performances and worked with so many giants of the business. Can you tell a little bit of the story of working with Fred Astaire?
Oh, my favorite story. I'm glad we got off of that awful subject. but in case anybody was listening who it might be helpful, I hope that's what the book was all about, really. But working with Fred Astaire was, well, first of all, when I was a little girl and I could be with my mother, we would always, my big treat was to go see any Fred Astaire movie. And I had a call from my agent. I was doing the Perry Mason show. And my agent called and he said, "Joyce, how would you like to do a show with Fred Astaire?" And I said, "Ron, listen, I'm really busy. I have to get back on set. Why are you calling?" He said, "No, would you like to do a show with Fred Astaire?" I said, "Ron, stop teasing me. I have to get back to the set." And he said, "I guess you don't want to do a show with Fred Astaire." I said, "Wait a minute, are you being serious?" He said, "Yes. Well, I almost fainted on the spot. And he said, not only that, you get to dance with them. And I said, what? And, oh, I imagined as a young girl, you know, in my dreams, being in a ballroom, a beautiful chiffon dress and being lifted into the air and dancing and waltzing and just doing these wonderful things and with Fred Astaire. And I was so excited. And then we got on the set. And guess what the dance was?
As I recall, it was the twist.
That's right. Claire from the ballroom being lifted into the air. However, I did have a chiffon dress on. And he grabbed me and he said, oh, Miss Bullison. I kept saying, Mr. Stair, please call me Joyce. And he said, you come behind the flat here. I don't know how to do the twist. Would you please teach me? And you better do it fast because we're about to be on. And I said, Mr. Astaire, you want me to teach you a dance? He said, yes, and make it quick. So I taught Fred Astaire the twist.
That is perfect. Now, you also did a film, The Happiest Millionaire, for Disney with Leslie Ann Warren and a great friend of our show who lives nearby, John Davidson.
Oh, yes, of course, poor John. He used to see me coming, and I did a lot of things for abused children, a lot of fundraising to help. And when he'd see me coming, he'd run the other way because I got him involved in the few. But, yes, that was great fun. I did a number called Bayom Pum Pum, written by the Sherman Brothers. And the movie was written by my good friend, A.J. Carruthers. And that was great fun, really a terrific time.
You were also cast as the original Carol Brady in the Brady Bunch until the producer.
Thanks for bringing that up. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry. Well, you know, we hit the highs. We have to hit some of those challenges along the way, too.
That's right. All the children, the little girls were cast to look like me. And on Friday before we started shooting, I was for 2 weeks, I'd been doing wardrobe, and I was showing the director and the producer the clothes. And I said, now, this is what she wears in the garden wedding. And I came out, and I twirled around, and they just sort of said, mm-hmm. And then I went back, and I put on the going-away suit, and I said, this is what she wears when she's going away on her honeymoon. And they went, mm-hmm. And I went back, and I thought, their attitude is so funny. I've never had that happen. Usually, they're always saying, well, is there another color? Or do you have to wear those shoes? Or is there a scarf? But they were just going, mm-hmm. So the third time I came out, I looked at them and I said, is something wrong? And they said, Joyce, sit down. And they said, ABC in New York has changed their mind. And Florence Henderson is available and they would like her. But we're going to fight for you because we want it to be more like the Lucy show and you're more like Lucy and doing comedy, so we're going to have to change the whole cast. We have to make the housekeeper now will have to be the funny one and Florence will be the straight one, and we're fighting for you. And, well, the long and short of it is, of course, Florence did it. She was very good. It was extremely successful. And I married Bill Asher and ended up having my own 8 children. I had the reality part, which I've loved forever.
You also managed to get a recurring role in one of the great series of all time, playing Marie Slaughter, the wife of Murray, on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. What was that experience like?
Well, that was great. And my dear friend, Gavin McLeod, who played Murray, lives nearby. We get to see each other all the time, and his sweet wife, Patty. And that was great fun. I mean, what a cast. I love going and watching everybody else do their work because they were just, each person was excellent. And Betty White said about me, happy birthday, Betty, wherever you are. She said to me, you know, Joyce, when Joyce tells a naughty joke, it sounds like a nursery rhyme. So I get to come out and say it.
You also have done a tremendous amount of stage work through the years. And would I be accurate in saying that you took a lot of inspiration from your role as Molly in The Unsinkable Molly Brown?
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right. You really did read my book, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Well, I'm very dyslexic, and my youngest son, John, who's a director, writer, producer, he's dyslexic, and but when she sings the song, I'm Gonna Learn to Read and Write, I really had my heart in it because it was so difficult for me, and I love working with dyslexic children, and I'm the executive vice president of the Dyslexia Foundation, and I've spoken all over the country about dyslexia. So, yes, it meant a lot to me doing that show.
And the fact that you dealt with that yourself when you were young, did that make it even more a matter of pride for you when you were on so many game shows in the 70s and 80s and so good on all of them?
Yes, sir. Well, you know, I was always the one giving the stupid, sometimes funny, sometimes naughty answers on Match Game. And that was because I couldn't spell. And you had to hold up what you put in the little slit, you had to hold up and show everybody. And I couldn't spell lots of times, so I had to try to think of something close to the answer that I could spell. So sometimes it came off kind of terrible.
Well,
but you know where I was really good with passwords?
Yes.
Because when you're dyslexic, you use mnemonics. You have to think of one word to get to another. That's why some children appear to be slow, because they're either making a story around a word to get to it, or they're thinking of another word that's going to lead them to that word. And so password was just an automatic good thing for me to do. And I even won the celebrity match game. I felt like Miss America. They gave me roses and a silver plate and everything. It was great.
Yeah, except when you were doing the match game and had to try and get away from Gene Rayburn, right?
Oh, yes. That was a little difficult. That was difficult. and also Richard Dawson. We won't go into, but if you read the book, you'll see.
Yes, absolutely. We're talking with Joyce Bolifant here on Downtown. Can you talk a little bit about working with David Spade and that terrific ensemble on Just Shoot Me?
Oh, that was so fun. I loved doing that. But it was different. We were on the Mary Tyler Moore stage at CBS in the Valley. And at one point, after I did the scene, my first scene, they said, okay, everyone, hit the rails. And I thought, what are they talking about, hit the rails? And what I found out was that the writers all line up, who are now given producer credit as well, all line up at the rail where the bleachers are, where people sit to see the show. And they all give you notes on your performance. And you go down the line taking the notes, and the first one said, oh, I love the way you read that line. That is so funny. Oh, my gosh. And the second one would say, you know, the way you did that line, could you think, give it a different color, try this. And I was thinking, what? And then the next one would say something else, and the next one would say. And I was brought up in the theater where the director's word is God, and that's who you listen to. And here were all these people giving you 10 different notes. So I said to David Spade, what the heck do you do? I mean, which note do you take? He said, your own note. It was what you think is the best. And he was a very nice guy to work with. They all were on that set. It was a fun role. I loved doing that.
Well, I wanted to ask you, too, about you were on so many series in the 60s and 70s and the 80s and on and on and on. But one show in particular I wanted to ask about, because we're here in Bangor, Maine, and the star of the series was from Bangor. Do you remember anything about working with Wayne Maunder on Lancer?
Oh, Lancer. Oh, my gosh. Wasn't that also Jim Stacy? Was he the star of that?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah. Poor Jim, and he had that terrible accident. But gosh, which role did he play? I'm so bad at names.
He was the other brother. He was Jim Stacy's brother on Lancer.
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, the book is absolutely wonderful, and I have to say, a happy ending in many ways, because your relationship with Roger that had started back in the early 60s when you first met, and you clearly had a connection there, and he was always He was always sort of there, but the fact that you finally were able to get together and have all those years together was just, that put a big smile on my face. I was so happy for both of you and that you got that big family that you always wanted as well.
I sure did. And I mean, the story of Roger and me is woven all through the book. It's a real love story. And it was a miracle. We would look at each other right before we'd have dinner, hold hands and say, thank you, God, for this miracle. I mean, it really was. And the fact that he was sober for 24 years. Otherwise, it wouldn't have worked because I had learned too much by then.
Joyce, thank you so much. I've enjoyed your work so much through the years. The book was a wonderful read and so uplifting, and I really appreciate you making time for us today.
Well, thank you. Be sure to tell them they can get it on Amazon.
Oh, I will do that, no doubt about it. Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye now. Joyce Boulafont on the Best of Downtown on this Sunday morning. When we come back, we talk with a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, British Invasion, the second group here after the Beatles, Dave Clark and the Dave Clark Five, next on the Best of Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
You love going out to eat and saving money. Well, the Ground Round in Bangor has different weekly specials every day of the week. Plus, happy hour at the Ground Round is way more than just 1 hour. During happy hour, you can get an appetizer for just $1.99 when you get another app at full price. And full mugs of Bud Light, Coors, and Miller Lite are just $2.99. Happy hour at the Ground Round is every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. and from 9 p.m. to close. And Sunday all day is happy hour, too. Want more details? Visit online at groundround.com.
Hi, this is Mike Toole of ClearPoint Capital in Bangor. I've been an investment advisor for over 25 years. Our firm is local, independent, and now with the addition of my two children, John and Jillian, we're truly a family business. At ClearPoint Capital, we help our clients grow and protect their investments to help meet their goals. Why not see what our team can do for you? Give us a call today at 307-7718 to schedule a free consultation. ClearPoint Capital. Our family helping yours.
Winter's here. Winter's cold weather and snow is finally arriving. Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street in Bangor, wants you to be ready for it. Bring your vehicle in right now and have it checked before the really cold weather kicks in. They'll check the battery, antifreeze, shocks, alignment, and don't forget the snow tires. Don't wait. For once, get ahead of the really cold winter weather. Make your appointment today. Call Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, or check them out on the web at bangortire.com. Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, Bangor. More than just a tire store.
Rebates have doubled. Yep, doubled for our most efficient heat pump systems. At Valley Home Services, get $1,000 off your first system and $500 off your second. And don't wait for the rebate. Valley Home Services provides rebates instantly. With combined savings and financing options, now is the best time to have Valley Home Services install your heat pump system. Double rebates. Call now for your free consultation and start saving up to 50% on heating and cooling. Valley Home Services, home is our middle name. Back on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning Groundhog Day.
It's right that I should care. Try to make you happy when you're blue.
Back in the early 1960s, a group of boys from Tottenham made it big in the music world as a part of that early wave of the British invasion. The Dave Clark Five would go on to sell more than 100 million records, have 15 consecutive top 20 hits in the United States, and eventually make their way into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. A new collection of their biggest songs, The Dave Clark Five, All the Hits, is out remastered on vinyl and on CD. We had a chance to talk about that with founding member Dave Clark. Hi, Dave. Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Rich.
My pleasure has been listening to this great music and this brand new remastered edition, All the Hits, the Dave Clark Five. It's been so great to hear that music sounding better than ever. And you went to the Abbey Road Studios, I understand, to remaster all these.
Yeah, because especially with vinyl, I'd never remastered vinyl since the last lot that came out in the 70s. The same as all the acts, the Beatles and Stones, they were all vinyl in those early days. I went back into Abbey Road, and I'm pleased with it, you know.
Are you surprised and a little bit happy to see the evolution of technology through, oh gosh, to cassettes and 8-tracks and then to CDs, and all of a sudden we're back at vinyl once again?
You're back to the beginning, yeah, really. Yeah, no, CDs I liked because you could get perfection on those, but the vinyl, I was surprised, but it's great, you know, it's music's good, it's universal, and, you know, I've always said, you hear a song, and whether it was when you were a kid and your parents were alive or whatever, you know, until now, and you just flash back on that moment in time.
Why is it, though, that the DC5 songs hold up so well? You drop the needle or you hit that CD, and I don't care how many times you've heard them, these songs sound as fresh as ever.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, time will tell, and it surprised me, you know, for all of us, with the Beatles as well, that none of us would have thought, you know, we thought 2 or 3 years, but not 50-odd years or so on. You know, it's more than a lifetime, and it's wonderful that they stand the test of time.
You had so many hits, over 100 million records sold, 15 straight top 20 hits here in the United States. How did you narrow down the selections for this, a new album and the CD? It's hard to limit because you had so many great songs through the years.
Yeah, no, it is hard. You know, you just take down to what are the hits in America, especially the U.S., that would appeal to our American friends, our American fans, you know.
You had 18 appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show here in the States. How important were those appearances to your success at selling records and selling out concerts?
No question. We came in really unknown. I mean, we had a hit record, but you're still visually unknown. You weren't seen on television. And to do the Sullivan Show, and I never heard of Ed Sullivan. I mean, we turned it down the first time because we never got the show in England. When we came in, you know, to do the show, I always remember coming in to Kennedy Airport to New York City. I saw these billboards, and they were fabulous. And one of them was all palm trees, and it said Montego Bay Island Paradise. And then we went in, did the Sullivan Show, and at the end of the show, it went so well that he pulled us back on stage at the end and said, I'm holding them over in New York next week to top the bill again. Well, we've already booked in England. So at the end, I said, I'm very flattered, Mr. Sullivan, but we can't do it. We're already booked. And he said, but I've told 70 million American homes. I didn't know we had performed to 70 million people then. And he said, I'll buy it out. And without thinking, I said, well, I couldn't stay in New York for another week because we had had 3 months in England with big hits. You couldn't go out. You were locked away. And we were really exhausted. So he said, where do you want to go? And I flash back on the coming in to New York from Canada, and I said, Montego Bay. It could have been the other side of the world for all I knew. And he flew us all to Montego Bay, which is in Jamaica, 5 days later, we came back on the Saturday to rehearse the show to do it on the Sunday, and there was over 30,000 people at Kennedy Airport. The power of television. And they couldn't get us out. They had to fly us out by helicopter. Wow.
We're talking with Dave Clark here on Downtown. You were ahead of the curve in so many areas, one of them being music videos, and you did some of those for The Sullivan Show. Was that your background in film and your experience there that led you to create really a new art form?
Thank you. No, I was always into film. I was a film extra, believe it or not, and a stuntman.
Right.
I did over 40 films before the DC-5 broke, but if you sneezed, you'd miss me. But the great thing about doing that is I watch good directors working, and I've always felt that it should be a combination of two things, and you can't be in every TV station around the world at the same time. So you didn't have the internet, or you didn't have satellite in those days. So I decided to do a promotion on our first songs, And in fact, the first one we launched on the Ed Sullivan Show, because it was a live show, but it was us water skiing to one of our hits. And that was, it was amazing for your first showing of a video you cut, going out to 70 million people. It was amazing. But the reaction was so good that I decided we would do that on the various records and then went on and so forth, you know. And it was very successful. At those times, they were called promotion, and it was the start of music video.
You were also very wise in holding the rights to your masters at a time when a lot of artists were being taken advantage of by record labels. So what enabled you to make that decision at such a young age?
Well, I made the decision because we wanted to be responsible for our own creative artwork. We wanted to be able to choose our own songs and our own music. And if it was successful, wonderful. If it wasn't, it's very easy to blame somebody else. So that was a reason. And also, we were going to sign with a major record company. And the first thing they said to me is, you can't do your own songs, and this is what you've got to record and how you've got to record it. I thought, that's not for us. You know, we were very successful as a live band, and I wanted to get that sound on record. Unfortunately, we were able to do it by being independent.
Well, it certainly worked well, and you hear the results on this brand-new collection, All the Hits, the Dave Clark 5. It's available on both vinyl and on CD. A wonderful collection. Dave, thank you so much. We wish you much success with the new album.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it, Rich. Take care.
That's Dave Clark of the Dave Clark 5 here on the Best of Downtown in your Sunday morning. When we return in just a moment, actress Annette O'Toole talks about what she's got going these days, which is a lot, and some of her greatest hits as well at Z62 Retro Radio.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Central Street Farmhouse, downtown Bangor, for the best home brewing ingredients, equipment, and advice that you'll find anywhere. Plus, make your own wine right in the store. How does that work? Pick a wine kit, make an appointment, and whip up 6 gallons of the best wine you'll ever taste in less than 30 minutes. 2 months later, come back to bottle it and take it home. They offer these wine classes every day they're open, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Call 992-4454 or see them on Facebook to find out more.
What makes a community thrive? The people who live in it. When you use your First National Bank Visa debit card at participating local businesses, you save on everyday purchases while supporting the people who work day in and day out to make your town a vibrant, unique community. Receive cash back on purchases and support the local businesses that make our communities thrive. Bank local, buy local. Learn more at dreamfirstrewards.com. First National Bank. Dream first, because you can. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Penobscot Theater presents...
Hold on to your hat, old boy.
A fast-paced comedy.
There's something you didn't know about this weekend.
One night, two couples, and a table set with lies.
My wife wasn't supposed to be here.
Funny and a little bit naughty.
It made me so mad I could do unmentionable things.
Don't Dress for Dinner, now through February 16th at Bangor's Historic Opera House. Tickets at 942-3333 and PenobscotTheater.org.
Dinner is served.
Oh, when the veil of dreams has lifted and the fairy tales have all been told, there's a kiss at the end of the rainbow, more precious than a pot of gold.
That song was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Song from a Motion Picture from, of course, A Mighty Wind. And it was written by our next guest, Annette O'Toole, along with her husband, Michael McKean. She has had quite a remarkable career as an actor, singer, dancer, and songwriter. You know her from films like Superman 3, 48 Hours, One-on-One, long-running roles on Nash Bridges and Smallville, and keeping busy these days with the new Netflix series Virgin River, Kidding on Showtime with Jim Carrey, and a recent appearance on ABC's The Good Doctor. We had a great time talking with Annette O'Toole this week on Downtown.
I'm very happy to be with you, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Now, we had your husband, Michael, on last summer, and I'm glad that he was not so scarred by the experience that he talked you out of it.
Not at all, because I just said to him, I'm going to go talk to Rich Kimmel. He said, I spoke to him not long ago. So he remembers it very well, and he was not scarred at all.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. You've got so much going on. I want to talk first about Virgin River. We had Tim Matheson on a couple of months ago, and what a terrific show this is, and what a tremendous ensemble they put together.
They did. It's a wonderful group of people, and we have a great crew. We shoot up in Vancouver, and I've been in Vancouver a lot. We shot Smallville up there, too, and I've done some TV movies, and I did the miniseries It up there. That was my first experience in Vancouver, so I know it well. I know how to kill time in Vancouver on my days off. And it's a really fun show. It's nice to be on something that I go out now to the grocery store and everybody kind of embraces me. We love the show. We love that we can watch it with our families. And it's just such a nice respite from things that are going on in the world that are hard to deal with. So I think everybody at this point would like to go to Virgin River and live there and be calm and quiet and peaceful. So, but it's a calm and quiet and peaceful set, I have to say. We all like each other very much, and I think it shows in the work. Although I've only seen three episodes, it's hard for me to watch myself. So I am taking other people's word for it. That as long as it speaks to people, that's all I care about.
Well, I can assure you it does. And you and Tim have such great chemistry together.
Thank you. We're really good buddies. I've known Tim, 40 years, something like that. We first did, we worked together on a TV show, a TV series. It was an anthology series called Whatever Happened to the Class of 65. Mm. It was based on a book that Michael Medved, I think, co-wrote.
Yes.
In fact, I know he did. And so every week they would tell the story of another person from the class of 65 who had gone on to you know, awful things or good things or whatever, sort of like the millionaire maybe from all those years ago. So that was the first time Tim and I worked together, and I had known him before that because he had done a movie with my then boyfriend, Bruno Kirby. And then we worked together again right after I had my first daughter. We did a show together that was sort of a televised play called The Best Legs of the Eighth Grade.
And then we went our separate ways for a long time. So this is our third and hopefully continued collaboration. He's an awesome actor, but to work with him as a director, too, has been really a treat because I didn't know him as a director. And it's really fun to work with him because he acts and directs at the same time. And I'd never had that experience before, being directed by the other actor in the scene. And it's really fun because he directs from the inside. So you just kind of, it's like dancing. You know, I just follow along and he kind of sets the pace and he's a great partner. We have a good time.
And you've already filmed season two, right?
We have. We just finished right before Christmas. And it was nice because last year we did get some time off for in the first season for Christmas. But it's cold up in Vancouver and can get rainy. And, you know, you're away from home and you just want to be home for the holidays. So this year they made sure we were all home in time to celebrate. So that was nice.
We're talking with Annette O'Toole here on Downtown. Very excited that you'll be also playing the character of Louise in season two of Jim Carrey's terrific Showtime series, Kidding. I love that series. It's so dark and at times uncomfortable, but so yeah. Ultimately human. Can you tell us a little bit about your character?
You know, they haven't told me what I'm supposed. I'm so worried about Virgin River. They keep saying things I can and can't say about it. So it's made me paranoid about everything else I've done. I don't know what I'm allowed to say about it, except that I have had a lifelong crush on Frank Langella. And so I got to do most of my scenes with Frank. I do work with Jim as well, but Frank was an absolute delight. Everything I had hoped he would be, he was, and more. He's just so much fun to work with. He's so conscientious. I mean, he works so hard at what he does. He really wants, and that's why it looks effortless when he does it. He prepares so beautifully. And we just had a wonderful time. We did a lot of really big scenes together, and some were very poignant and some were very funny. My part spread out over, I think, three episodes. And also, it was shot right near my house in L.A. I haven't worked at home in such a long time. It was delightful. I could almost have walked there to Sony Pictures. And then we shot one night on location right around the corner from my house. And so we finished like at 2 in the morning. And I was going to walk home, and Michael said, "You're not walking home. I don't care how safe our neighborhood is. I'm coming at you." So we sat outside. It was like my stage door, Johnny. He sat outside the location house where we were shooting and waited for me. And he just picked me up and zoomed me home, and that was it. It was really nice. And Jim was fantastic. And also, I didn't really get to work with her, but Catherine Keener,
oh, man,
one
she's
of the
great.
Nicest people. I don't know if you've interviewed her.
No, we haven't, but I'd love to.
You should. She is the sweetest, kindest. I got on the set, and, you know, they've been doing this show now for a year, and now they're way into their second season. I walk on, and, you know, she just came to my dressing room. She hugged me. She said, "I've always loved your work. Welcome." And it was so wonderful. Because as many times as you do this, you know, you walk into a new situation with new people, it's not all that much easier. You know, you just feel like, oh, God, I'm the new kid. And she couldn't have been sweeter. We have kind of a scene together where she's kind of in, you know, she's over there on the side, and, you know, but we don't really interact. So I'm hoping for the day when that can happen. She's an awesome person.
You also found the time to do an episode of The Good Doctor with friend of our show, Richard Schiff, that airs tonight.
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, I worked with Richard before in a an independent film we did about 5 or 6 years ago. It was longer than that. It was 2012. So, it was really fun to work with him again, and it all worked out in kind of a crazy way. The Good Doctor is my mother's favorite show. She loves The Good Doctor, and since it debuted, she said, "If you could get on that show, that would be the most wonderful thing that happened." So I kind of put the bug in the ear of my agent. I said, "Please, you know, if there's any, I would do anything. I'd do a walk-on. I'd be an extra. If you could just..." And I didn't know where the series shot. So I get up to Vancouver while we're doing Virgin River, and somebody said, "Oh, over there, that's where the Good Doctor shoots." I said, "The Good Doctor shoots up here?" I said, "Oh, my God." So I went back on Virgin River. We have a wonderful supervising producer from Netflix named Jocelyn Freed. And I just mentioned this to her. She said, I know one of the producers. I know all these people over there. So I'm going to make this happen. Because right before that, my mother fell and broke her hip. So she was recuperating. I'm flying back and forth. And so I really wanted it to happen to make her feel better, to kind of get her through her recovery. So it all came together. It was like magic, the way these people worked it all out, the ADs on each show, because we were working like in the same city at the same time. And it's the first time I've ever done that, where I've gone from one set to another at the same time. So there seems like they've been showing the trailer where I faint in the beginning. I meet my daughter, played by Fiona Gubelman, who plays Morgan Resnick, and we're meeting and embracing, and then I faint because I've got this thing that you'll find out about tonight if you watch it. And so I did that scene, and then ran over to Virgin River and did a scene, and it was really fun. It was like acting summer camp, you know. It's just like, how much can you do? How much exercise can you get? So that was fun, and everyone there was fantastic. I've been so lucky to work with so many wonderful people, and especially this last year has been like heaven for me.
I loved your work, too, and what I think is one of the best series of the last decade, Halt and Catch Fire. And I just wonder, from your perspective, this golden age, new golden age of television, the availability for great roles seems to be there now much more than it is in film.
Absolutely. The writing on these shows is incredible. We've been watching some lately that we're just staggered by the quality and the acting. And it's really wonderful. And you know, actors my age, and or actresses especially my age, have much more work there. You know, there's much more need for us because, you know, in film it's going to be Meryl or, you know, Jessica Lange or Sally Field or, you know, Annette Bening or the people. And what's nice here is that they just want the right actor for the part. And you can get caught, like I did for Kidding. They just called me up. I suddenly got a job on Kidding, and I hadn't even known about their, you know, that it was happening. So it was really wonderful and out of the blue. And I feel so lucky to get to be still doing the thing I've wanted to do since I was 9 years old.
We're talking with Annette O'Toole, and Stephen King owns our radio station, so I have to ask you about your work in the King universe. You did 11/22/63, and of course, the miniseries It back in the day with a pretty talented group of guys you got to work with.
Oh, my God. It was so much fun. Talk about summer camp. I was the only girl, you know, and all these boys, and they were all like, they were all so funny and so sweet. And even Tim Curry, you know, he was like one of us too when he wasn't in the other trailer getting his makeup put on. He was just one of the group. And we had a wonderful time together. It was really, really fun. We all had our kids up there. And we shot during the spring and summer. And it was just a blast. And it wasn't scary when we were doing it because it just wasn't. We knew it was supposed to be, and then you see it, and it's like, oh, my God, this is really creepy, and I couldn't let my kids see it, even though they were in some of the scenes. Like when they're throwing popcorn at the movies, they're in that. And so, yeah, I have nothing but very happy memories of that time. And then 11/22/63 came out of the blue, and I was very excited about it. I hadn't read the book. I ran out and got it, and I realized that my character is really not in the book. She's sort of just a name of this woman who owns a boarding house or something. So I didn't have to do a lot of preparation. I could just kind of come up with something on my own, and I did, and it was fun. I still have not met Mr. King. I've never met Stephen King, and I would love to. He's certainly an idol of mine. And, you know, we got to leave some things for the future, I guess.
I know you were very close, and your families were very close, you and Richard Thomas, and also one of my favorite actors. And we had Peter Bogdanovich on a while ago, and he was raving about how much he loved the work of John Ritter.
Oh, yeah. John was something really special. John and I also worked together 3 times. We did, before It, we did a movie called The Dreamer of Oz, a TV movie about L. Frank Baum. Which is a wonderful movie. It's a really nice family film if people are looking for something like that. And I play his wife, Maude Baum. And I'd known him before. We kind of, you know, knew some of the same people. I'd see him around and stuff. But we'd never worked together until Dreamer of Oz. And then I was looping The Dreamer of Oz with him. And I said, what are you going to do next? And he said, oh, I'm going to do the Stephen King miniseries called It. I said, It. Oh, my God, it's one of my favorite books. And I said, who's going to play Beverly? And he just kind of looked at me. He said, they haven't cast Beverly yet. I said, really? So I don't even know if I said anything to my agent, but I think he must have said something. And it just was magical, you know, that all worked out. And then we did, after that, we did Love Letters together. They were doing it at the Beverly Cannon Theater here, which I don't even think exists anymore in Beverly Hills. But it was, every week they would have a different cast of two people reading love letters.
Oh, the A.R. Gurney piece?
Yes. And so you never knew who was going to be there. Well, they would advertise it the week before. But I went and did that with him, and that was really fun, too. And then our kids went to school together out here in L.A. So I would see him at, we'd have these school big events, fundraisers and things, and we'd all perform and do silly sketches and songs and snappy pattern. So I would see him then. And his death hit me very, very hard. It was really horrible. I've seen his son since, who played our son in The Dreamer of Oz, Jason. So, yeah. And Richard Thomas, you know, he and his girls and his other kids, you know, we've all been close throughout the years. I see him all the time. He was in a play with my husband a couple of years ago. He was in The Little Foxes. In fact, right. Richard was nominated for a Tony for that. That's one of the nice things about what I do. You know, you never really say goodbye to people you love. You just see them eventually down the road, you know, or you pass them at an event. And it's very nice. I have a lot of really wonderful friends who I stay in contact with all the time.
I have to ask you about the songwriting. And Michael told us a little bit of the story, but can you share what happened when the song that became Potatoes in the Paddy Wagon came to you?
Right. Well, it was right after 9/11. It did not have a happy beginning. There were no planes. I was doing Smallville. There were no planes from Vancouver to Los Angeles. I mean, this was the next day. This was, well, maybe not the next day, maybe the 13th. So I drove back from Vancouver back home because I just wanted to be home and I wasn't needed for a few days on the show. So I rented a car and drove back. And it took me a day and a half, I guess. And so I got back, and the second I got back, they called and said, oh, we've changed the schedule. We need you. So I had to drive back. I had to get in the car and go back. So Michael said, well, I'm going with you. So somewhere between Portland and Seattle, I started having this weird little melody in my head. And I said, what is this melody? I can't get it out of my head. Am I making this up, or is it something I heard a long time ago? So I hummed it for him. And he said, you're making that up. I've never heard that before. So we started putting kind of nonsense words to it to just remember it, because at that point we didn't have, this is, you know, 2001, we didn't have cell phones that you could record into. So just to remember it, we said, potatoes in the paddy wagon, blah, blah, blah. So from there I said, I love that. We got to keep potatoes in the paddy wagon, but potato has to be a girl. That has to be her name. So we just we wrote most of it in the car, and then by the time we got to Vancouver, we finished it up, and we came back and sang it for Chris Guest, who was putting together all the music for A Mighty Wind, his film about folk music. And he really liked it and said, yeah, that's a great song for the new Main Street Singers. He said to Michael later, would you write this signature song, Michael? And the only thing it has to have is a kiss in it. It has to have, it has to end with a kiss. So Michael came home and said, do you want to write this song with me? I said, yeah. So we sat down at the piano and wrote the song in about an hour. So that's how, and that was the song that kind of became there were many wonderful songs in the movie, and everybody contributed to that, Chris and Eugene and many, Harry Shearer and many people. I think Harry went on that. And then that Kiss was nominated. So that was lovely. It was really fun.
And in one of the funniest films of all time, it also created this beautiful, poignant moment.
Yeah. The nice thing about the song is it was really used in the film as a character. It was so important. You know, that was the Mitch and Mickey's theme song, and it was all about will they kiss at the end, because they've had this rift in their relationship. They've broken up, and now they're together, and they're not together personally, but will they kiss? It's a big deal. And they talk about it the whole time. And so, yeah, it was nice to write a song that was meaningful in that way to the story and not just a song over the end credits. Mm.
All right, before we let you go, I have to ask you, what are you knitting these days?
Oh, my God, I've got three projects going. I did all my Christmas knitting. So my girls, who both have birthdays in December, so not only Christmas, but two birthdays, and I make them each something for a birthday and for Christmas. So I had like four projects going on. So I just got all that finished. Each one got a sweater and socks. So I just finished making a couple of hats, because I have a lot of leftover yarn, and I like to use it to make hats, and I donate them to whoever needs them and give them as presents. And I just finished a couple of neck scarves, but now it's accessory time. January's accessory month. So that's what I'm doing. Thanks for asking, because knitting really is my co-pilot.
Check out Virgin River on Netflix with Annette O'Toole, Tim Matheson, season 2 of Kidding coming soon to Showtime, and tonight on The Good Doctor. Annette, I've been a fan of your work for so many years. It's great to talk with you this afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Rich. I enjoyed it so much.
That is Annette O'Toole here on The Best of Downtown on your Sunday morning. Carrie, I got to put that, I think, in her all-time top 10. She was just an absolute delight to talk with.
Some great stories. The one that I found absolutely charming was the doing the work on Kidding, Close Enough to Walk Home, but No. Michael was having no part of that. Picked her up like a stage door Johnny.
That was great.
It's just a great turn of a phrase.
She was wonderful. Annette O'Toole, and again, catch her in Virgin River with friend of downtown Tim Matheson on Kidding with Jim Carrey on Showtime as well. Our thanks to Annette. Thanks to Dave Clark of the Dave Clark Five and actress Joyce Bulifant as well. And thanks to you for joining us on this Sunday morning. Got a good show for you tomorrow. Michael Socolow from the University of Maine and a writer whose work is seen in publications all over the country will join us from the Iowa caucus tomorrow. Anybody else around here doing a live report from there? We'll take care of that tomorrow. Plus Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Alan Adams of the Maine Edge with movie reviews on Pass the Popcorn, and Sean Lash of the Amera Astronomy Center joins us as well. We hope you have a good rest of your Sunday. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock for Downtown here on Z62 Retro Radio. You're gonna